Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about automation update 29 or even up to 30. And in these updates, I just discuss the software used to generate podcasts. And that doesn't sound much to a lot of people. And eventually move on to producing synthetic podcasts, or as some people have called them, multicasts, rather than a podcast. The podcast is taken, deconstructed, and reassembled as a various radio show, classroom program, private study, that sort of thing. Some information is taken apart. Now, it may seem that most people can, a lot of people can code, a lot of people can get right up little bits of code, but I'm possibly a little bit different here in that from industrial business programming, I've sort of integrated strategic outlook with code, with technical capability, put that sort of thing together. So the strategic outlook basically is the requirement to produce so many podcasts a day to develop up my cognitive skills in assembling it under certain things. And then if I say it's very positive, it's the amount of time that you spend podcasting, organizing your podcasts, that can quickly build up. So say if you spent, I suppose, half an hour a day, half an hour a podcast, putting it all together, editing it and stuff like that, and then before you published it, say even that would be conservative. If you said that at the start, I would have said, oh, that's nothing. But if you do, say, five or four podcasts a day, that's two hours every day of the year, all the time. That's a lot of time taken up, and in quite repetitive, sort of non-productive, non-focused things. It's sort of like having a gym, equivalent a cognitive gym, but say a physical gym, and you get to, and to get there, you have to take a bus, and you have to wait on the bus and go in the crowded bus, stuff like that. It's much better if you can actually build a sort of, I suppose, a beam me down, Scotty, type of stuff where it gets it out there really quickly. Now, that's a long-term thing, and that requirement is actually quite a complex requirement, because you have to upload things to the web. That's fairly obvious, but in uploading to the web, you have to put it into an upload FTP engine, and the FTP engine fails at certain things, so you have to actually put it into the FTP upload area, and then remove it when it's uploaded, and put it into the FTP area, check that it's uploaded, then remove it out of the FTP area. FTP means file transfer protocol. And essentially you have to use really a commercial FTP program for sort of several reasons. One is that if the computer that you are using fails, these FTPs have enough scripts to rebuild themselves. So if the computer switches off, or someone pulls the plug on it, or they say, hey Dad, I want to do some homework on it, or... So there's only one computer and one slow internet interface for you. And also the other thing is that a slow internet interface means that you need to run the file transfer in background, so that can take however long, but sort of effectively instantaneous starts to go up there. The sort of second reason is that as you expand, you want to sort of vary things. Like you have a computer with fast internet output somewhere in Australia, or somewhere in the household, or something gets hooked up to the internet. You want to hook your FTP program onto that and put your files into an area which can be seen. So even as much as, say, have a file which is stored in Google Docs or Dropbox appears on someone else's computer with a fast internet upload, it can actually go up there. This is, it's hard to say, but essentially when you've got a cluster of computers working, you want redundant capability in them. So this is sort of fragmented, almost neural program nodes that will operate. So just to go back, I designed a robotics factory where the actual robot software is fairly sophisticated and distributed and very robust, so people could come in and actually remove a cable or remove, shut something down, and the system would rework out how to work it itself. So this is sort of a healing process. Sort of an example is that I had a software system at school where like the Moodle system was just unworkable. The amount of time to log in and sort of like doing keyhole surgery to get two kids. So I had built a robotics marking system, which where the kids could just email it to an email address and it would be submitted and acknowledged, and it would go back by a website. Remote computers could monitor it, and it's a bit hard to describe, but if you can imagine, I think it's called Misty Catbot, and kids would email their stuff to Catbot, email certain things to Catbot, certain assignments, and it would basically manage it, mark it, and most importantly, assemble all their work in a portfolio where you could actually see and monitor what's going on. The horrible thing was that it was run remotely off a computer at home. So one of the things is that in the education department, they really cut down. You can't file transfer. You can't run an FTP program from the education department. It's just not allowed. It was allowed, but then eventually they cut down, and then the number of people knowledgeable enough to request just disappeared. In fact, there was just an expertise vacuum. And so I got around this by having people, or at least able to email their work to a email address. The email, then it opens it up, and then files that, you know, software program that you've made, and as it can even mark it, or I can mark it, acknowledge it, put it all through a Catbot program, it's called Misty Catbot. And that was all running third party, the bits and pieces, but sort of a combination of a software package called Email It In and Google Docs, I think, yeah, Google Docs, and I'm just trying to think, and of course LabVIEW, which would, so Google Docs would just, you have a folder on a computer mapped to it. And it so happened that I was in the middle of class running with these things, and got the kids quite excited, and then Misty Catbot went down because I think someone unplugged my computer to do some vacuuming at home. And I said, oh, this is, I'm sorry about this, it just happens. But what I hadn't realised, that I had actually programmed this up to be resilient. So another computer I had in the house, woke up and realised, which was monitoring it, realised it wasn't up and running, the computer wasn't up and running, and restored Misty Catbot again. So it rebirthed itself. It had if I had 9 computers, it would have 9 lives. It'd be fairly indestructible. So essentially, you want to get that in the actual structure. And with the standard things, you get the skeleton up with a development version of the software. That is, it's got all diagnostics, redundancies, fallbacks, rollbacks. So you can roll, you put something forward, it doesn't work, you can instantly roll it back rather than actually going ahead. Now, what you'll hear now is an enormous amount of rain. So it's been dry in Australia, and now it's been raining for a good 24 hours. And fortunately, I've been able to rely on Audacity for a fair amount of rain coming down. This thing, recording with this amount of volume, and with Audacity, let it go for a while, pick up the rain, and it just subtracts the rain out of your podcasts and stuff like that. So that, well, I won't do it for this one here. And so with Podomation, it's people, in general, I wouldn't expect anyone to be really interested in it, but it's one of the things I have to stop. And so for that, having the rollback software, when something doesn't quite go out, I can change something and then hit a few buttons and it republishes it. So I've got to record it, memorize it, archive it, put things up, and again, this podcast software operates on Gmailing to Blogger, and Blogger hooks into Feedburner. I've got to speak to Feedblitz and work out how they can fit in. It's beyond me how that works. So it works. That way, and then built out another direction. I can keep an image, just an image of the podcast, not the podcast themselves, because that's too bulky, and store that up and build it up in a app. Now, it's one of these things, one of the things I can't really monitor. I can monitor podcasts, but I can't really monitor the use of an app. I could, I suppose. It's a bit ho-hum intrusive stuff. So this is a mobile phone app where you actually press a button, and it, for a podcast, unfolds different assets with it. This is a class multiple choice, a class word search, few related things. They're buttons on an app that you press, and that's all automatically done. And that's evolving some advanced, well, it's not, this is advanced maths. The maths itself is something that a high school student could understand. It's new maths, new types of ideas, and this is in the all things considered software. So it's sort of like it's a mobile phone, do-it-yourself, DIY, periodic table, which is read as sort of a combination of English and Chinese, Japanese. Now, Japanese is down script. So it's English, Japanese as you read through it, and you can pick out conversations. So it's a very, very powerful software. So I've just bolted that on. And then, as I've been going along, I've been in the podcast sphere, been developing, some sort of methodologies, and as a speak, so that's the podcasting, that's relatively stable. And I think that the only most recent update is that I've modified it such, there's just little things to speed up. Given that it only takes 20 seconds or so, probably a minute or so to do it, I've sort of just focused on a few things which have gone in to improve it. One is getting the title, blog title of the podcast to be the, getting that across to the screen title of the podcast, and what else? Getting the reference, being able to go through so you can reference to a new podcast, and that's just a few more steps that's implemented. I think that was, there's no issue with this. So this podcast engine seems, and that's called the Podomator podcast engine, and that's would have easily taken the first 20 Podimation reports for what's going on. So that's sort of describing the Podimation. So for this podcast, I'll just at the end take my dictaphone, take it over the computer, a few minutes, and it'll be published out and away as a Podimation podcast. And there's actually a few people following it overseas. So what it does is it is continuously every 10, 20 seconds it's having a look at the USB ports to see if anything's put in there. You know, is it a dictaphone? Yep. Does it have a podcast on it? Yep. I'll take that. And it then uploads it onto the flash memory, the SSD, so it's much faster. I don't know what they have in these dictaphones, but it's pretty incredibly slow. I would imagine incredibly low power, because it's going to be run out of batteries, but incredibly slow. There's really no excuse for it. It's a real legacy technology. I think you've got USB 3 and stuff like that. And the sort of people who use dictaphones are not going to be your techno geeks that want things quick, I would expect. So that may be the example, but nonetheless, it just suits you. Hook it into the computer, even if the computer is in sleep mode or stuff like that. This is in the background going, and it will take it off. So the net effect is that you switch on the computer, open the program, and it's already uploaded and sorted the podcast ready to be published. Then you edit up on it. I suppose the other major thing is, given that I have been doing typing practice, slowly getting up the speed. And this is one of the more dreadful things in cognitive rehab, is where you hit the wall. Things don't really improve for a while. And you keep on just pushing it, and occasionally you get a little bit of a win. Cognitive rehab, I've just read an article that you can improve your memory by walking backwards. Give it a go. It's going to cost me anything to walk backwards. So I'll do. I don't think I can podcast and walk backwards at the same time. But apparently that improves in memory. And, I can't just quite describe it. Just really push again. It has allowed me to, touch type, allowing me to get a fair amount of information out. I'm aware that as I touch type, it's sort of stream of consciousness, it's not structured. I don't have to think and actually have a structure to structure what's going through, but that means the overall podcast is relatively quick. Then we move over to, there are things in the podcast sphere of things, this is scientific approaches, quantum mechanics, and there's a podcast, series of podcasts buried in there. It's called about reversed order synthetic answers, and this is an observation that in any complex linguistic task, like a job application or a question or something like that coming up, you can synthesize an answer, and it's going to be a very good answer. It may not be the most easy to understand answer, but it's a very good high mark answer by actually starting at the back of the question, working backwards to the front of the question. Now, this is called reverse order synthetic answers. And so in this case, it means that if you do a multiple choice question for a quiz, you can think of the question, and then you can stumble on what the answer is going to be, and it's just really clutty. And at the end of it, you can write an explanation. Your explanation can actually cover new material that really doesn't fit in with the question, and so it's just a bit of a disaster. Now, the way that most people get around this is, they're not trying to do it. They write out a bit of text and make it. They just do it as, I don't know. There's re-engineer it. They do a lot of engineering for the text and engineering for the questions, and it doesn't hang all together. But if you do it reverse order, That's a brilliant thing. So you start off with the explanation, then question, and then four answers. And then I sort of, I would have put 2-3 days, possibly even a week, no. And this is for the LabVIEW version to, LabVIEW to take over VLC and LAME and use those two together to produce production of, of some text. So you read in some text that comes across and, essentially I was writing a, what would you say? So Audacity is essentially that, but it's something where you have to stay within the Audacity environment the entire time. So Audacity, the input is sound, the output is sound, essentially. That's the case whereas I want the input sound and the output identified files that go in a certain thing, and it has to be addressed by software. So essentially, that's the normal thing I do is look at a piece of software, look at the handles of it, and generally there's command line codes to it. So Audacity doesn't have command lines codes. It's a graphical user interface for LAME. That's what Audacity is. So LAME is a software, open source software package, which is operated by command lines, similar like the old Unix, like the very old command lines, like the very old computers you had in the 70s. And I suppose one of the advantages that I began programming 10 something rather years old in the 1970s, and it was all command line Unix type of stuff, just feed the command lines and running batch files. And then if you've got robotic software, you get the robotic software to write batch files on the fly. And essentially, this is what this does here. I had to come across. And so I've migrated across to seeing how Audacity is. And Audacity is by far the best because the process of writing a quiz. So the idea is you have a piece of information. There's one way of getting the information. It's listening to a podcast. It begins at the start and relies on my consciousness to add things together. It's got a bit of a story and narrative to it, but it's really, unless I read something, it's sort of, I'm just going to talk to you about Podomation and stuff like this, that, stuff like that. This sort of doing that means that you've got to invest a lot of time afterwards to go through, listen, and identify, tag various sections. Now, what I was thinking of doing is that I could whistle or click with my mouth to tell the software so it would look over across it. And then, of course, that was a disaster. I did looked at doing Fourier analysis of my clicks, and which should be very easy. Can I say, if you have Audacity and you whistle into it, you can just produce a dead-on dinky-die sound wave. So if you do the power spectrum over that, that's a single spike, and that should be easy to detect, but it wasn't. Well, it was okay. It was okay in some things, but it just really wasn't. So you can imagine, and of course, there's a problem. There's a series of problems here. So the essential thing was using Audacity, and it wasn't completely. I spent a week or 3 days programming an alternative to Audacity, and again, that effort wasn't completely wasted. And you've got to take this in context that there's a lot of people really wasting their time in teaching. That is, they're learning old techniques and just spending heaps of time make crafting an individual lesson rather than actually creating lesson creation software. So, I don't feel that bad. And that time gave me the insight as to what you wanted to do when you got into Audacity. So, say if I was investing in me, I wouldn't bat an eyelid at the time wasted making an Audacity alternative. And I was getting there to how you could edit using keyboard strokes, and I think I was getting relatively good there. Well, there isn't really nothing that compares to Audacity. So Audacity has a few ins. If you want to record, you open up Audacity, you plug... Now, there's a few bugs in Audacity, okay, which is rather a bit disturbing. If you use a computer's microphone, built-in microphone, you have the problem that if you hit a keyboard that resonates on the desk, goes into the computer and picks up on the microphone. So you automatically get a click and you get the whir of the computer in the background. No matter how much you go, this is a bit... The microphones are a little bit rubbishy, but they're quite... compared to things I've set up in the labs, they're genius. They're just really great. Compared to things I've set up in the field, and they're great. But albeit, I did have really low quality microphones. I had very low quality microphones. I had to actually go through and solve capacitive problems in them. That is, so if you get a very low quality condenser mic, you can actually pick it up to such as the equivalent to a very expensive one. But to do it, you have to get little bits of silver foil and solve all the capacitance problems around it. I think people who build microphones will know perhaps what I'm talking about. They just don't operate. Fundamentally, you get all these different hums on cheap microphones, and the hum is due to resonances with its capacitive circuits. It's just not impedance matched properly. So indeed, a great microphone is of the old style, requires excellent connectors all the way through to where the analog signal is digitized. So what I have is this little camera, which I can't and I use the microphones on that, plug it in, and Audacity doesn't know it, doesn't show it, but it switches to it automatically, and that way it can be very good. So you just press R to start recording. After that, you have to press Shift R and Space Bar to stop. So I really, ideally what I'd like is one of those foot pedal things, like I used to build robot systems for factories, and if there's these little foot pressels, which they actually have, I don't know why they have it, they've got an air switch, I think to do with safety and flooding, and this is one of the things that I learned in factories. So many times you don't put your computer on the floor because things flood. I've never done it. In fact, many, many years ago, sort of a supervisor, sort of the boss, we had a YAG laser, and he left the water on at night, as you do. But these are just hoses, and there's a whole thing you learn. At any rate, it all flooded. The whole thing was flooded, and it was, oh my god, everything's destroyed. But I had put all the computers up on boxes, everything up on a box, and so everything was dinky-dye. The flood came in, the flood went out, nothing was lost. So ideally I'd like some sort of foot pressel, but unfortunately Audacity doesn't have a... got to work out how that could be done. But anyway, you've got to use Shift R to record the next thing. And as you record something, you pause, so it's nice so you can see what's there. then you just mouse over it. It'd be nice if it was, you know, touch screen, I suppose. You mouse over it, and then it's Shift V, and then you assign a letter. Now, obviously, as you go through, letters become redundant, and then it's Shift Control L publishes it, your file into a directory of, and fills the directory with all your files that you've labelled one after the other. And one of the things you have to do is you have to disable notifications out of Audacity, so that's really good. But the great thing is that Audacity's got a config file it writes to, so once you've played with Audacity, it remembers the way it's set up. So that means that one of the important things is that if you deploy, eventually I'll deploy this, one of the things is I have to find this bloody little config file. Where is the Audacity config file? And export it. And then there's this dancing process you have to do, is that you have to read that file and rename those files such that it can work out. So the third explanation is the start of the third question, and it's all set, translated and set up. Now, in theory, I could have, if I knew in advance what Audacity was going to do, I could have second-guessed it. But I've wrote my software ahead of time, and before I worked out what Audacity was doing, so I've got some conversion software. That conversion software takes the information from Audacity and puts it in a directory ready to be spliced into the various formats, the various batch files put in there. Now, there's a little bit of a waltz which has to come in. It says, okay, if that's a new file, if that's a newly created file, I'll read it from there. If there's nothing there, I'll read it from my storage thing, my storage area, where I store an image of the newly created file. So what happens, and then I delete it. So what happens is, so if you can imagine, container A, container B. Container A gets filled up from Audacity, and then it then looks at that and says, look, there's something in container A. I'm going to copy that over to container B and use it, and use the stuff in A. But I'll delete A afterwards. So A, the container A will be empty. So when the next come along to look at A, it's empty. So, there must be something in B, so it goes in B and takes that. However, if I put something new in A, it starts using on that. So at least that's it's sort of like a rock climbing thing where something it's got a resonancy. And that took I don't know quite how I solved that one. It's one of those things where, like, I'm really not conscious of how I've solved it. Then there's a similar thing in that it's A, B duality, and then the directory. One of the things is that if it keeps on rewriting into a directory and this file's already there, I still scratch my head and hope this is all right, because I'm not really conscious of doing it. So once it's beginning to do this thing, it says, well, these are going to be fresh files, and it cleans out that directory. Now, that's the overall thing. And then putting it out, so that now means that I have a relatively stable, there's 34 minutes on this one. Sorry, I'm just looking at this. I have to speak for a certain amount of time. That's a relatively stable platform. Now, what I want to do after, so that's relatively stable, so I can actually produce it. There's certain things that I can't do. I can't rearrange the order of questions. So if I develop some questions, I can't edit them. but the major thing is that some people listening to it, they say, oh, the audio quality is not good here, or this is not good here. Or when I listen to it, I say, there is no way someone out in podcast land could possibly know the explanation has stopped. I've re-asking the question, and there's the answer again. So I've just had to sit up, and it was fairly easy, except for one thing that when I copied a cymbal clash for the end of the end of the answer, give you audio clues. Audacity sent the entire file, so you'd listen to it. The cymbal clash, and then there'd be things also sampled with it. And so that, you know, what the heck the heck's going on there? But I fixed that up fairly well. So that's the chlorine quiz number 3 going out there, with that sample out there. And the question is, if you are on a radio program, do you need to know in advance? I think you might need to know in advance the number of questions that are going to be up there. And so what happens is that it does certain things like counts the number of questions. Look, I don't do it anymore. It just says, oh, how many questions? 9, okay, well, it says there's 9 questions here. Now, this speaking thing is not at all new. So when I had industrial robots solving problems so that people could work with them, I had them speaking and saying, I'm now doing this. Oh, I've seen that. I think I'll do that. And would actually speak. So it's sort of fairly similar from a couple of years ago, the way it's going through. So we're up to this point here. Now what has to happen is, and almost cry thinking about it, I have to, you know how I've got the, I've got the A, B, slots to take things from Audacity, because Audacity's not that smart. Okay, so it's out there. So essentially, Audacity has to plop its stuff into a clean space. So essentially, it will look in there, and if it's there, it will take the stuff. It's sort of like a delivery area in front of a factory. It will check if it's in there, take in the delivery, process it, and leave the delivery yard free for the next delivery, no matter how fast it's going. Now, it has to do a sort of a similar thing here for so it's like a mini factory. It gets the things for Audacity, it has to convert it into something which is readable to be spliced in. It's a fairly simple story. Oh, there's several things it has to do. When it comes out there, when it goes into splicing, there's pseudo-random number generators which vary the order of things. And it's quite sort of amazing to listen to, that where you say something and it is randomly, and it's so simple. It's just I just do the random, how it randomizes it. There's a do loop where it clusters. It says cluster of the answer and a pseudo random number. Well, the pseudo random number goes first, cluster, but then it produces a little array of clusters, a little of the pseudo random number and the answer, and then it says just order array. From biggest to lowest, or lowest to biggest, I don't know how it does it. I think lowest to highest. And then, because the pseudo random numbers are that, it's like it randomizes it, and you take it across, and you just plot it across and push it across, and the answers are then randomized, and but the correct answer is always identified. It's fairly easy to identify. So there's nothing, and I can't quite remember how it remembers which is the correct letter to put, but it is correct there. I just have to, how does it do that? I, quite honestly, I've written the software, I couldn't, I don't totally forgotten how it does it. But this is the problem when you write so much software, you have to, you forget it. So, there's this, it's sort of like, delivery bay. And I have to, then, for the exit bay, create an archive of everything that's produced in the exit bay. Because the exit bay is then highly valuable real estate, because it then says what answer, and so when someone says something, you know, that wrong answer, or you know this, you can go back and look at it, and then I really got to build the same engine at the start. I wish I had done it as a coherent little subroutine, but I'm so guilty of, as I can remember, splitting it up across the bigger subroutine. But I've got to do the same thing at this delivery. So it's got a delivery bay into it. And so every time if there's nothing delivered, it reprocesses what last is delivered. But there's an empty delivery bay. Similarly, there's got to be a directory input. When that directory goes up, it's got to have, am I provided something? If there's nothing there, go back and deliver something. Or am I told to look at something else? And I've got to have that list of something else. And that's a bit of a grind to go through all the stuff. And then I'll have to index all the quizzes. To come across. The process now is just to see who's interested in the quiz and to see if that goes ahead. But there's this overall thing that I have to push ahead on these quizzes, getting feedback from it, and then integrating it. So at the moment, the quizzes are put out through this tiny sort of pinhole drip onto the internet. It's not so much it goes through iTunes and Feedburner and stuff like that. It's going out through a very, so I can turn up the faucet, turn up the rate, and ideally, if I can get other teachers doing the same, teach other teachers the same thing, I think I can create a system. And ideally, I've got to then migrate this across to Educational Experts and get it validated, because at the moment there's that very sort of hostile thing of, well, we don't like anything you do, you just got to get out. Yeah, it's a system, and that's the way it is, but I can't really focus on that. I've just got to keep on developing and hope that I can develop at a particular fast enough rate to actually, you know, push across the line, which is pretty much the way I've always had to do robotic development, i.e. there's a startup company, it's got dwindling amount of cash, and we have to produce just enough to impress the investors that it can be, we can actually manufacture something robotically. And if you worry, or if you a little bit, you lose the energy to actually achieve the goal. So this is what I'm trying to do at the moment, is achieve the goal of getting coherent strategies out there. So this is the podcast strategies, the quantum mechanics strategies. The other strategy of there's something else to be done in terms of if you are stagnant in situation, i.e. you can't get any resources, can't get any training, it just means that you have to go back in internally and rearrange things such that everything is aligned correctly. And I think I covered that in a worth, know-how, motivation metric. So people looking at this, if you don't understand it, will say, well, if this is not worthwhile, then other people don't know how it's done. Is and you can't really push the worthwhile, but it's in that dimension. So if you have your presentation at the worth, you know, saying this is really worthwhile, no, that's not the way of doing it. Then the, even if people see it's worthwhile, they will not know necessarily how to do it. And so you just have to say, look, I'm operating in this motivation vat space and trying to get there. And it's a risk. And, you know, the structure of things, yes, you can win. You can actually kill it if you want to, if you can be completely negative if you want to. But I'm working around that. So that's the end of this Podomation podcast. I'll get back to broadcasting the, Cosmos Magazine. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.